Picture a room full of Harvard MBAs, each convinced they'll outperform three-quarters of their classmates in an upcoming negotiation exercise. The irony? They can't all be right, yet 68% genuinely believe they will be. This overconfidence isn't stupidity, it's human nature. And it's precisely why brilliant executives routinely destroy millions in value at the negotiating table. Consider the NHL's catastrophic 2004-05 lockout. After sacrificing an entire season's revenue, the players' union accepted a $39 million salary cap, worse than the $42.5 million they'd rejected months earlier. Rational? Hardly. But predictable? Absolutely. The real genius in negotiation isn't about being smarter than others. It's about recognizing the mental traps that ensnare even the brightest minds, then systematically avoiding them. Benjamin Cohn owned 7,000 acres in North Carolina. When endangered woodpeckers appeared on his property, he did something that baffled environmentalists and economists alike. He began clear-cutting 500 acres annually, not for profit, purely to prevent the woodpeckers from expanding their habitat and triggering more restrictions. He destroyed both economic and environmental value because he assumed that if environmentalists wanted something, it must hurt him. This is the fixed pie bias in its purest form. Cohn rejected habitat conservation plans that could have served both his interests and environmental goals because he literally couldn't imagine mutual benefit. His mind had become his opponent. Most negotiations assume a fixed pie, with success measured by claiming the largest slice. This zero-sum thinking leaves up to 42% of potential value unclaimed. When Richard Holbrooke faced a billion-dollar U.S.-UN standoff, he proposed immediate U.S. assessment reductions while delaying other nations' increases until 2002. Both sides won. The pie wasn't fixed, it just needed reshaping across time. The Moms.com television deal left $1.1 million unclaimed. WCHI valued additional runs at $800,000 each, while they cost Hollyville only $250,000. 8 runs at a higher price would have benefited both substantially. This is where log rolling transforms negotiations. You care about delivery dates, they care about payment terms. These differences aren't obstacles, they're opportunities. When a construction company and developer couldn't agree on fixed pricing, they linked payments to fluctuating material costs instead, unlocking value that compromise would have destroyed. Vividness bias compounds these failures. MBA students routinely accept prestigious jobs with high salaries, then quit within months. They overweighted easily communicated factors, brand names and compensation, while underweighting location and workplace culture. Then there's escalation of commitment. You've invested 3 years in a lawsuit. Do you settle for less than you've spent or keep fighting? Rationally, past costs are irrelevant. Psychologically, admitting those years were wasted feels impossible. Labor strikes spiral out of control. Price wars destroy industries. Custody battles bankrupt families. Not because anyone wants these outcomes, but because no one can admit their initial strategy failed. When Chris arrived at the negotiation, his team had failed. They'd agreed on everything except exclusivity. The European supplier absolutely refused. Days of persuasion accomplished nothing. Chris asked what his colleagues hadn't. Why? The supplier's cousin bought £250 annually. That was it. A family obligation for a trivial amount. Chris immediately proposed exclusivity with a cousin-sized exception. Deal saved. This investigative mindset separates mediocre negotiators from masters. When someone makes a demand, most people either accept it or counter with their own. Skilled negotiators ask why until they understand the interests beneath the positions. The supplier's position seemed incompatible with Chris's need for competitive protection, but the underlying interests were perfectly reconcilable. When Homestuff's CEO learned that supplier COGS needed 3 months for delivery, he investigated. The bottleneck wasn't manufacturing, it was shipping costs. Since Homestuff had negotiated favorable shipping rates, they offered to handle logistics for $500,000 instead of the $1.2 million COGS would have paid. both sides split the $700,000 savings. When negotiations stall, introduce new issues. Bring in maintenance agreements, training services, warranty terms, anything that matters differently to each side. When you genuinely disagree about the future, structure contingency contracts. If you're certain your product will outperform competitors, welcome performance-based pricing. Here's the counterintuitive truth. Negotiations should never end with no. When Linda lost a major client to a competitor, she made one final call, not to argue, but to understand. She'd misunderstood their priorities entirely. They valued certain product features over price, which she'd eliminated trying to reduce costs. Armed with this insight, Linda restructured her proposal and won the business back. 8 research-backed strategies can make your proposals significantly more persuasive without changing their substance. Loss aversion is most powerful. Homeowners told how much money they'd lose by not insulating purchased far more than those told how much they'd save despite identical amounts. Frame proposals around what others stand to lose. Structure concessions strategically. People experience more pleasure from multiple small gains than one large gain, but less pain from one large loss than several small ones. Make concessions incrementally to maximize perceived generosity. Make demands comprehensively to minimize perceived burden. The door in the face technique starts with an extreme request designed to be rejected. When researchers asked strangers to counsel juvenile delinquents weekly for 3 years, nearly everyone refused. When they then asked for just one day of chaperoning, 50% agreed, triple the 17% who agreed when asked only for the day trip. The foot-in-the-door technique works oppositely. Bar patrons who first signed an anti-drunk driving petition were nearly 6 times more likely to wait for a taxi when intoxicated. Small commitments create psychological consistency, leading to larger ones. The door in the face technique dramatically increased compliance. When someone asked to cut in line at a copy machine, 60% agreed. Adding, "because I have to make copies," raised compliance to 93%. Always provide supporting evidence, even if self-evident. The foot in the door technique works oppositely. Bar patrons who first signed an anti-drunk driving petition were nearly 6 times more likely to wait for a taxi when intoxicated. Small commitments create psychological consistency, leading to larger ones. Trivial justifications dramatically increase compliance. When someone asked to cut in line at a copy machine, 60% agreed. Adding, "because I have to make copies," raised compliance to 93%. Always provide supporting evidence, even if self-evident. Social proof leverages our tendency to follow others. An infomercial writer changed "operators are standing by" to "if operators are busy, please call again," implying others were buying. Sales skyrocketed. Reciprocity is powerful even in small doses. Survey recipients who received a dollar bill responded at nearly twice the rate of those offered a $50 incentive. The token gift created obligation, the large incentive felt transactional.
Framing effects reveal how arbitrary our rational preferences are. When told a treatment saves 200 out of 600 lives, most choose it. Frame it as 400 deaths and most reject it. Identical outcomes, opposite choices. In negotiations, we're risk-averse with gains, but risk-seeking with losses, compromising easily when dividing profits, but becoming rigid when allocating costs. Most dangerous is egocentrism. In one survey, 85% believed others should pay their legal costs if they lose a lawsuit. Only 44% believed they should pay when losing themselves. We don't consciously think rules should favor me. We genuinely perceive situations in self-serving ways. Lawyers paid hourly honestly believe clients need thorough processes. Those paid by settlement honestly believe quick agreements serve clients best. Neither is lying. Both are unconsciously motivated by financial incentives they'd swear don't influence them.
The most common question in negotiation training: what do I do when they hold all the cards? First, don't advertise your weakness. Roosevelt's campaign manager discovered 1 million pamphlets had been printed with a copyrighted photograph, potentially costing $3 million.
Instead of apologizing, he telegraphed the photographer, planning to distribute millions of pamphlets with your photograph. Excellent publicity opportunity. What will you pay? The photographer paid $250, unaware the pamphlets already existed. Second, examine their BATNA, not just yours. When both sides have weak BATNAs, whoever makes the other's weakness more salient typically claims more value. When forced into price-only negotiations, change the game. Submit multiple proposals simultaneously. Bid just low enough to advance. Send proposals directly to end customers, bypassing purchasing agents. These strategies shift the conversation from pure price to your distinct value. Sometimes, extreme weakness becomes power. After World War I, Romania doubled its territory despite contributing little militarily. Its strategic position as a buffer against communist Russia made its stability vital to Western powers. If you create value for others, you gain leverage to claim value for yourself. But sometimes negotiation itself is the wrong choice. Max spent 15 minutes negotiating a taxi fare from 40 to 30 baht, saving 40 cents while his exhausted wife waited after international travel. Sharon and Mark aggressively pushed their builder to reduce his already low bid, poisoning the relationship. The house was completed months late with persistent quality issues. Their initial victory cost far more than they'd saved. When your BATNA is genuinely superior to any agreement, exercise your best alternative and move forward. The goal isn't to negotiate everything. It's to achieve the best outcome, whether through agreement or walking away. You now understand more about negotiation than most people will in their careers. You know that value creation precedes claiming. You understand how to investigate interests beneath positions, recognize psychological biases, and apply proven influence strategies, even from positions of weakness. But knowledge isn't expertise. True mastery requires deliberately applying these principles in every interaction, not just formal negotiations. Your journey begins here. Every conversation becomes practice. Will you investigate interests or accept positions? Expand the pie or just fight over its division? Recognize biases or let them sabotage outcomes? Negotiation isn't just professional. It's how you navigate relationships, resolve conflicts, and create value everywhere. The principles that save Fortune 500 deals also save marriages and strengthen communities. At its core, negotiation is the art of working with others to create value, then claiming what you've earned. That's not manipulation, that's wisdom.